This episode is sponsored by Kokako Organic Coffee Roasters. Unhappy with the unavoidable carbon in their supply chain, Kokako decided in 2016 to become one of the first carbon-neutral coffee roasters in Aotearoa by offsetting their emissions with the Fair Climate Fund. Find a climate-neutral bag of beans for home at kokako.co.nz.
Welcome to How to Save the World. I'm Waveney Worth.
I'm Tim Batt.
And today we've got Glenn Herod with us, founder of Happy Cow Milk Company in Christchurch. Welcome, Glenn.
Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful to have you all the way from Christchurch. And I am pretty excited to hear what you've got to say to us today, because we've covered off a few things in this episode, this podcast around farming. We're always talking about farming because the whole ethos of this show is how to save the world. And for us as people who buy stuff and might not necessarily be the people making our own food, we want to know where it comes from, and we're just starting to really understand that if we want to change the direction that we're heading as a planet, that it seems to just always come back down to farms, farming, farmers, carbon cycles, nutrient cycles, nitrogen cycles, and then you've got people like yourself who've given it a good crack, and you've just got so much to share.
Well, it's been a bit of a journey.
Do you want to start with your journey? You got into it in 2012?
Yeah, well, I grew up as a dairy farmer, and I got sick of dairy farming in about 2004, and I left and just worked in town for about 10 years, 11 years. But I always kept coming back to
Why did you get sick of it?
Oh, it sucked. just early mornings. It's just the thing that I was in Southland at the time, and what were the dairy boom had just taken off, and people were coming down buying a sheep farm, and they'd put a cow shed on it, double their money, and do it again and again and again. And farms were just getting big, and I just didn't like the way things were happening. It was really hard to work on a dairy farm. They long hours, and I just didn't like that life. And I my parents had a dairy farm, and they decided they wanted to retire. And we sort of talked very briefly about me taking over the farm, and I just didn't really want to. Mm. I'd probably be a multimillionaire now if I'd done that.
You weren't the only son, were you?
Well, I also had my sister, so I could have taken over the farm, and then, but my parents would have had to scrimp and save and everything like that, and I've sort of watched them, you know, work over their career to own their farm and everything, and I sort of felt they should retire and, you know, enjoy their retirement. So, yeah, my sister and I are poor now, but anyway.
Your parents have managed to enjoy the fruits of their labour, though.
They're retired on the big house in the top of a hill in the Southland. So, yeah, but no, the industry just didn't appeal to me. Yeah, so anyway, I started renting washing machines and fridges and stuff with Mr. Rentals. And that was really good to learn business and marketing and sales and, you know, making the phone ring and things like that. But I wasn't passionate about it, and I always wanted to change dairy. And I felt, I've always been a dairy farmer, and I just sort of, when I got out of the farming sector, all my friends started to be now townies, and they didn't know that I was a dairy farmer, and you started to hear what people actually thought about dairy farmers.
That's because so
I think previous to that, people would know that, oh yeah, Glenn's actually a dairy farmer, so
you got an edited version of
probably didn't hear what everyone really thought, but now
so what did people think? What was these comments?
It was things like, you'd meet an older lady somewhere, and she would say, oh, my grandson has just started working on a dairy farm, and it's the worst thing he's ever done. He hates it. He's been worked so hard and all this sort of stuff. And, or you'd talk to teachers, and they'd say, oh, it's the dairy farmer workers. All their kids are coming in, and they move so often. They've only here for a couple of weeks, and then they move jobs, and then they move, next lot come in, and because there's such a high turnover of dairy staff. And it was, you know, just all through it, people just negative vibes about the dairy industry. And I just sort of got this sense, and I kind of already knew it, that dairy was going down the path, or the wrong path, and it was going to start to get quite unfashionable. So that was around 2004, 2007. And I remember saying this to a group of dairy farmers once, and they sort of all laughed at me. And they said, what are you kidding me? They said, the school's twice the size. I mean, the economy's booming. Everything is booming because of the dairy industry, and it's true. You know, the sheep farmers now retired to Cromwell and with $1 million in the bank and all that sort of stuff. What, everything is perfect. And I was saying, no, I just, it's not, the tide's turning here, and I think you guys are going to get in a bit of trouble. But in 2006, that was unheard of. And it was about that time I started looking at how we could do dairying different. And the thing that really gets me is how farming is becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. And it used to be you could start with a small little herd of cows or a small farm and your family could live on it. And it's probably the same sort of vibe that's happening in every industry. You know, you can't, the little corner store now probably doesn't, you know, support a family anymore. And even just having a job, one working partner. You now have to two working partners. But this is sort of happening in dairy. And to go dairy farming, you really needed to either have parents or you had to already have money.
Mm.
And so that's really how I was looking. How could we start milking with maybe 50 cows?
That was the herd size my uncle started with. It used to be so standard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, New Zealand's got the biggest average herd size in the world. It's around 400 cows.
And is that to do with scale? Economy of scale?
Yeah, yeah. So New Zealand's always been very good at getting economies of scale. If you go into America and the UK or the US... No, sorry, the EU, you know, it's around 90 cows is the average. But a lot of them are not profitable either. So we can talk about that later. But so this is why I started thinking, well, you know, why do we need this big $1 million cow shed? Maybe if you could just have a little mobile cow shed. Why don't we, you know, just thinking how to do it differently. And eventually I decided, right, we're going to do it. And I built this mobile cow shed, and I bought 7 cows, and then one got Yoni's disease and died, so now I only 6 cows. And I didn't know how to process milk, so I built a little milk processing plant out of in a trailer.
There would be a reason people would not build a...
Well...
That must have been a huge learning curve.
I was I picked the MPI inspector up from the airport, and he's been in the industry for like 40 years, and he said, so what dairy experience have you got? Dairy processing experience? I said, oh, none. He says, have you looked at a dairy? No, he said, have you worked in a plant before? I said, no. He said, have you visited one? I said, no. So basically, it was a real big learning experience. But actually, that was really good. It's actually good to come at something with complete ignorance because then you haven't got a preconceived way of things, how things should be.
Was one of your motivations for going down this enormous journey to try and cut plastic out of the process?
I knew that's a path to get into the goal. The goal is I just want ordinary people like myself to be able to be successful.
So why couldn't you just give your milk to a factory to process it?
Well, no one will.
Because it's too small?
You could. No, yeah. Well,
like what problem was it solving?
I spoke to Fonterra. What we wanted to do is how do we drop the cost of setting up a dairy farm so ordinary people can do it? And so I went to Fonterra and I said, hey, I've got this mobile cow shed. And, you know, yada, yada. And they were like, you know, we don't really want to deal with him with 50 cows when we can, you know, get a standard dairy farm with 800 cows.
Okay,
you know.
So these guys were like, we didn't want to deal with the smaller scale. It's just frustrating.
And the dairy industry was a little bit different back then. We had Synlait and everyone, but no one really wanted to take my milk. So it then became, all right, I better process it myself. And also, I don't think I could have made money selling it to Fonterra, getting 55 cents a litre. I would have needed to have like 200 cows.
Yeah, so back to scale again.
Yeah, we're starting to get up there. So the idea was, well, let's start with 10 cows or 15 cows, whatever, and then if we can sell the milk for, you know, $3 a litre, that theoretically on my spreadsheet made sense.
how does that stack up to standard milk? That's like what was sort of the delta or the markup?
So your average milk's probably $2.50 in the supermarket, and the farmer gets per litre, and the farmer gets around 55 cents.
And so you were looking at a premium for your small farm.
Part of the thing is I learnt through my life that I've got like a real problem with numbers, which is not good if you're running a business. It's not that bad, but the thing is it kind of stops me from getting a job at a bank, or it actually... yeah, it's, there's certain things that I can't do because of that, which is fine. But, you know, this idea that, I suppose it's an equality thing. I suppose that if you're smart and you've got everything going for you, then you can be successful. But what if you're, what if you've got some disability or you've got other issues or you don't have a very good, you know, upbringing and all sorts of things? How can those people be successful? And people always are successful, but it's like, how do we make more and more people successful? And that's kind of what drives me. And we don't really talk about it with Happy Cow. We're talking about our plastic and how we help the, you know, our cow and calf thing and all those sorts of things. And those are important. But at the core of it, it is how do ordinary people, you know, have a, you know, have a successful life and actually make money. Yeah.
So that's just begging the question. Actually, we're kind of, we're jumping around now. We're at the beginning of your story where in 2012 you set up Happy Cow version one. And it all, like you said, it all made sense on the spreadsheet. You did your numbers. Oh, which you've just said, oh, I'm not really a numbers man. So that might have been, looking back. And then I guess you sort of, you waded right in there. And there were quite a few things that you were ticking the boxes with. One, I know, was you really wanted the calves to be able to stay with their mothers, which was why you went with the mobile unit, so you could bring it to the cows and the little calves wouldn't have to walk for a kilometre to the cow shed.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so, well, yeah, when I say I do have struggled with numbers, no, the numbers were fine. what happened was that, yeah, we did. We wanted to, well, the cow and calf thing, I didn't think it was a thing. I just decided, you know, I'm just going to leave my calves with their mothers. And I was kind of embarrassed about it because it was just not the done thing. But that's how I wanted to do it because it made sense. It's like, well, why do we, a cow has a calf, the cow feeds the calf, but why am I going to pick up the calf? I then have to find a trailer to put the calf in. I then have to separate the cow from the rest of the herd to go into the milking herd. I've then got to drive that calf back to a shed. I've got to find a shed. I've got to find some enclosure to put it in. I now have to feed it. I now have to get milk from the cow, put it into a drum, get some way of taking that drum to the calf. Let's just leave it with its mum.
Yeah. So you're like, this makes sense. Yeah. Simple. Yeah, but then when you got into it,
It was cool. Like, I'll do that all day long. Like, I absolutely believe it's the best way to do it.
And well, hence the name, right? Happy Cows.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Like, but, mm. Well, we were called Nature Matters Milk Company because we thought everyone cared about the environment.
I like you jump in and then you go, oh, okay, and you make a little pivot, so you're able to obviously move with the.
Well, we're writing this sign. I'm going to take this milk to the farmers market. And you say, I'm like, what are we going to put on our sign? And we said, Happy Cows.
Cool.
And anyway, over the year, you would watch people read your sign and they go, oh, Happy Cows. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they'd ask about that, and I'd tell them about our calf thing, and they're like, oh my gosh. And I realized it was a thing. And of course, we did reusable bottles as well. Hang on,
that's a huge thing. You just say that like a throwaway comment. Yeah, yeah. You did reusable bottles.
Yeah, we decided.
So how did that happen? It's such a hard thing.
Well, it's hard. No, it's not really.
It's really hard for it to be economically viable.
Yeah, I know that now.
We're building up to what happened in 2018, right?
So anyway, that's we're going to use dispensers, but I ran out of money, and I thought, I can't buy a milk dispenser. Oh, I'll just stick it in bottles, and we'll, because we had a big cafe in Christchurch wanted to buy our milk, so we started with that, just doing with bottles, and then we had so much demand, and then it was like, oh no, I need more calves and more cows, and now I need, you know, it's just a growing business. So, I mean, we were growing really fast and trying to do everything and learn how to do everything. And eventually it got to that point where I needed a bigger pasteurizer, so I'd buy a bigger one, and then I'd need some form of bottle machine, so I'd do that. And it was always like, if I could just get a bit bigger, if I could just have a more expensive bottle machine and all that sort of stuff. And I eventually bought all this stuff, but then you get different problems. The problem was, now I had to keep this bottle machine going, and I had this bottle washing machine and it kept breaking down, and It ended up, I just realized that this wasn't going to scale. We had the idea of people spending a moderate amount of money to set up a small dairy farm and be and supply their local market was actually, you needed to be a multimillionaire to do it. And I visited a milk factory in Nelson, which is Oakland's Milk, and they're probably the most successful local milk company in the country. Like 80% of Nelson's cafes use their milk with reusable bottles.
Right.
And they're awesome. And I looked at their setup and it was like literally millions of dollars. Like literally millions.
Mm. Is it profitable?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, well, I think so.
Yeah, because they're just there's got to be some interesting kind of graphs showing that initial outlay to get all of that machinery. How long does it take to pay all that off, and how much have you got to be producing to pay all that off?
They're successful, but they're a very well set up family. It's a family operation. It's a multi-generational dairy farm. They've got, you know, significant amount of backing behind them, so they can afford to do it. And what it is that it really is, if you want to set up a small scale boutique dairy farm or supply your local market, you kind of need to be a dairy farmer, which means you're probably worth $6 million, and then you've got to have the desire to spend, you know, $500,000 to take this risk. And the reality is that there's not that many people that fit that narrow description. And if they do fit that description, they probably don't, well, they certainly don't believe in doing things the happy cow way. So we wanted to change that. So anyway, we were running flat out, and I realized after visiting their factory that ours wasn't going to scale. I wasn't likely to get profitable because I'd need to invest even more money on equipment, and I thought this is all wrong. So we decided to shut the business down because I had about 100K owed to creditors, and my assets were about 100K. And I thought, right, we can sell everything and everything, we'll be back at zero. Well, I wouldn't be, but everyone else would be.
And it was pretty tough emotionally, yeah?
Yeah, it was actually. Yeah. And because this was like my baby, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, you must have poured your heart and soul into this thing over the years building this whole new system, this new way of doing things.
Well, I just was not going to fail, basically. I'm not going to fail. And like I had a staff member leave in the middle of the busy time. And I remember I'd start at 4 a.m. on a Friday. Like Fridays were really busy. I'd milk the cows. I'd then went and delivered milk, came back, milked the cows, processed the milk for the next day. And I worked through the night, got all the milk bottled, drove it into the farmer's market, came back, and I'd finished at 11. It was like a 34-hour day or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just like, no, I am not going to, I'm not going to fail. It's just like, no, I've got customers that are relying on me, and I can't just ring everyone up and just say, sorry, there's no milk today. Because you crash your business. So this is the thing. Yeah, I was really determined not to fail. And actually, that's a stupid thing to do, by the way. Because you're not thinking properly. You're just putting one foot in front of the other.
I guess you get the deeper in you go, the more you've got vested and the harder it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, I mean, you've taken the risk and, you know, I've got four kids and
put everything in. Actually, that was something you on Facebook at the time, you wrote, I'm out of money, I'm tired.
What did I?
My kids have not had a proper dad and I've been a pretty poor husband. I've decided to go into liquidation.
Yeah.
Just bringing back the dark moments there.
Really sticking the boot in, wife.
Oh, actually, I'm glad you reminded me of that, did I? That was probably right, yeah. So, so we did. We ended up shutting down. I didn't want to liquidate the company, but Eurofins were owed, you know, $5,000 or something, and they said, well, we're not going to wait for your money. I said, look, well, you're going to sell the assets and I'll pay you. And they said, no, if you don't pay by the end of the month, we'll put you into liquidation. So my accountant said it's best to go into voluntary liquidation. So I did that, and I was really livid because, you know, we could have actually, I thought I was doing it responsibly, and I thought we could get everyone paid. And then once the liquidator came in, they just sold everything, which is fine. And actually, in hindsight, it was the best thing that could have happened, because if I probably would have tried to restart using all my existing stuff, but that wasn't ever going to work. And to have it taken away and me left with nothing. So, Yeah. So anyway, what happened was I did just shut it down, and my wife said, right, I'm going, I'm taking the kids down south. I'll be back in 4 weeks and you better have a job.
Can I ask as well, just in the lead up to this event, had you been telling this story sort of publicly along the way of, because your company's had quite a bit of media over the years, were you sort of sharing this Happy Cows story?
I think I was pretty, I tried to post on Facebook and things, but I was pretty busy and I wasn't
very
good.
Yeah, sounds like it, Glenn.
But no, I didn't really. I mean, I wasn't, I'd intended to, but we're just too busy with the day-to-day. Mm. But I think people were just starting to hear about us and, you know, like what we were doing and stuff. But I don't think they... No, it was a shock to a lot of people. They're thinking, like, you see these companies that's growing, everyone wants it, there's so much good vibe and stuff, and then, oh, you're shutting your doors.
Mm. I know, because I guess people like us too, Tim and I, we cling on to these stories and think, oh, great. You know, there's a producer that we're able to... We know it's ticking all the boxes. Mm. And, yeah, it is. It's gushing when you hear it not working.
This episode is brought to you by All Good Bananas, 100% New Zealand owned and operated. All Good Bananas leave a better taste in your mouth because they're certified fair trade, helping the grower communities in Ecuador. They're a small business trying to make a big difference. All Good Bananas are good for growers, good for the land, and good for you. Find out more at allgoodorganics.co.nz and find All Good Bananas at your local New World, Pack and Save, or independent retailer.
Yeah, so it was April the 5th, if I got that right, where you told all your Facebook supporters that you were shutting the doors. And then what happened on that day?
What year are we now?
2018.
Cool.
Last year.
Was it? Okay. April, yeah. Yeah, well, basically it got to the point where I just couldn't. I mean, creditors owed me money. I had like 25K of people who hadn't paid me money. I couldn't actually fill the truck up. I'd got to that point where I just actually couldn't go any further. And my wife said, you've got to shut it down, which is about, she'd been saying that for about 2 years. And I said, all right, I will. So I went to the cafe and I just, yeah, I did. I wrote the Facebook post and then I went home and not really sure what to do. Oh, I rang a few of the cafes and said, sorry, I can't deliver your milk, which lets them down. But and then I suppose everyone was like that sort of, there was a whole heap of support. So
what happened on Facebook that day?
Oh, so I think it went, is that what you call going viral?
I think you had an enormous outpouring of people who were like all these comments, hundreds of comments.
Oh, yeah.
Offers of support.
Mm. And there was one, I remember, there's one woman saying, does this mean I don't get my money back for my bottle?
There's always one.
but anyway, so this was going on and my wife was like, finally, this is over. And she said, I'll be back in 4 weeks. We'd have a job. And of course, all this outpouring of, I suppose, support was coming in. And my team, you know, of, you know, freelancers and people who have been helping me were saying, well, we've got to do something with this. You know, you can't really wait. So we were figuring out how to do this. Was it going to be a Pledge Me campaign or how would we relaunch? And
did it take you a couple of months for that turnaround?
Well, there's so much to go on because we had the liquidation going on. So I had meetings with the liquidator. I didn't really realize it, but I was pretty shot. And long story, I knew that we were going to somehow get support from our crowd. I was really confident in that. I just didn't know how it was going to happen, and I just needed to work through what we were going to do, how we were going to do it. And the weeks just popped by, and my wife came home, and I said, oh, actually, I'm going to have another crack. Ooh. And, so that was the end of that. So she said, well, you best go live somewhere else. So I, that's what happened. So I then got the Patreon support going. I thought, well, I just put a video up. I work out of BizDojo in Christchurch. They had bought our milk and they sort of said to me, you know, you can base yourself here. We'll give you a free month. So I based myself there and just put a video up saying, well, you know, we're going to make this work. And I can't even remember what I've said now. And the inbox just like, It was just like doof, 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 doof every time.
People pledging their support.
Someone's pledged $34 a month, $20 a month, $5 a month, $350 a month. And it's just my whole inbox was just...
Wow.
And it got up to, you know, 780 people, I think.
Wow.
At its peak. And it was just like, my gosh, look. And...
That is so cool. It's such a clear story of people able to make a difference.
Yeah. So, I mean, without that, I mean, there was so much, I suppose looking back on it, there's so much doubt and self-doubt. And I mean, you've got, you know, you've got your family to support. You've got all this stuff. Everything is pointing towards do not carry on with this business. It's like, it doesn't work. You've just proved it doesn't work. You've just worked so hard and all that, it's not going to work, you can't do this. Reusable bottles is a nice thing, no one's going to do it. Happy cows is a nice little gimmick. And this, all this feedback's coming in, and then it was those people who are actually prepared to do it actually what's keeps you going. And you know, those Patreon people, I probably don't communicate enough with them. I don't, you know, post enough and let them know how important they are. But you know, if we do carry on this and this is successful, it's those small people are going to be the ones who kept it going. And I was like, well, if people are going to give me money for no reason other than they want to see Happy Cow carry on, well, I'm going to do it. And to be honest, I just slept. I didn't realize it. Probably took me 3 months to get over it. April, May, June, July. I'd go to work, but it was like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Mm. We're trying to pretend to analyze the dairy industry or something.
You've probably broken your brain pretty significantly in that little period, right?
Yeah, I think I had, yeah. Yeah.
Needed a bit of recovery to let it grow back.
I got some interns from Canterbury Uni and I'd set them for, like, figure out how to deliver milk. You know, what does it cost to deliver milk to a suburb and all this sort of stuff? And I'd ring up people. And actually, a funny thing, Peter Callahan from Lewis Road rang up and he was like, oh, I just read your story and, you know, it was really inspirational and everything like this. He said, give me your bank account number. And I was like, oh, yeah? He says, yeah, I think we'll just give you a little donation.
Wow.
Like, yeah. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And so he deposited, $5K in the bank. Just like that.
This is potentially you're a competitor.
He's a competitor.
That is absolutely incredible.
It is.
It just shows like...
Wow.
It actually shows... Like, I've heard he's a good guy, but like, we are a competitor essentially.
Yeah.
And yeah, and actually, for a lot of the smaller scale dairy producers, they're actually pretty good people, like the Oakland's Milk, the Aunt Jean's, they're the same crowd. They're good people as well, and Jersey Girl Organics and stuff. Generally got, you know, New Zealand business a little bit different.
Mm. Mm.
And
it just seems to be such a good business metaphor for something that we're really bad for doing in New Zealand, which is just putting your hand up and going, I need a hand every once in a while, you know. We're so, I think, just by virtue of our national identity, very siloed and put your head down, work through it, you know.
Mm.
But it seems like you just got such an amazing response because you got forced into a position where you had to go, hey, actually, guys, this isn't quite... I've been trying really hard and this isn't quite working, so I might need a bit of a hand here. And just the response, this is staggering. To get almost 800 people signing up to do a monthly financial contribution and have a business competitor... Just drop $5K in your bank account.
Like, and I wonder, does that? I mean, you probably can't answer this question, but you said before about how your the actual beating heart of Happy Cow is really around people, and is there something there that people are connecting with and they can see?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I just think you just got to be honest, and I think honesty and transparency is really just so rare nowadays, and I suppose when you just crash and burn, like literally crash and burn, what else can you do?
A public crash and burn.
Yeah. Well, I put the Facebook post and about 20 minutes later, the reporter's on. Hey, here, you're going to close down.
But it actually sounded like ultimately it did, even the media coverage of quite a public failing, realistically, worked to your advantage ultimately because it got the word out, right?
Well, I think if you're trying to save baby calves and the environment and things, it kind of goes in your favour.
Let's talk about Happy Cow version 2.0.
So I at BizDojo, I'm sitting there at the coffee machine. There's the front page, well, page three or something, is Happy Cow and Liquidation or something like that. And Roger Sutton, who used to run Sierra, the earthquake thing, he's quite a, I think he runs power companies and stuff. And he just came up to me out of the blue and just said, I think you're doing this the right way. And he said, but what you need to do is you need to, have you figured out what went wrong? And I said, yeah, I know what's wrong. And he said, no, have you written it down? No. And he says, go write it down. He says, today. And actually he could probably see it in my face. I was like, yeah. And he said, no, write it down. So I did, and I wrote down this report of what went wrong. And I just delved into everything, like our distribution, because our milk was expensive. Why was it expensive? Why couldn't I get it cheaper? Why couldn't we process it like this? And then I started, I talked to Lewis Road about their business. I talked to all these other milk processors and figure out why we couldn't make it work. And it was basically that we're too inefficient at processing, took too many people. The reusable bottles was too labor intensive.
Were they glass, by the way?
Yeah. Bottles? Okay. Yeah. Filling them was too expensive. The distribution was, we were selling expensive milk, small amounts of expensive milk at lots of little places. So it means you have to do 20 or 30 deliveries a day, which means they had a full-time person, which means lots of traveling and things like that. And then I'm just thinking, how could we do this? How could we reduce that? How could we reduce that? So we basically come up with this model where, well, I knew we needed Happy Cow because that's what people were supporting me for. So we had to have this cow and calf system and our principles around sustainable farming and things. We needed to have reusable packaging and we needed to keep it small scale. And then, so I rang up the processors up here, Green Valley Dairies, and said, would you fill our reusable tanks and all this sort of stuff? And no, they wouldn't, and all this sort of stuff. And I just figured out, well, we've got to sort the processing ourselves. So we developed this little milk pasteurizer. It's about 130 litres. If you can think of a dishwasher, mm-hmm. think of a tank like the size of a dishwasher, and then cut it in half. So it's a long, skinny, rectangle tank. And it's basically three things in one. When it's at a farm, it becomes a milk pasteurizer. So it sits into a hub, which is basically an enclosure. Just think of a steel or a plastic little hub thing. And you put these tanks in there, and it's controlled by an iPad. And what happens is what we're trying to do is lower the barrier of entry. So it's really milk processing by numbers. So the iPad talks you through it. So any one of you right now could go to that unit and pasteurize milk within the regulations. You don't have to know anything.
What? So if I had like five cows, I could?
Yeah. You can literally plug five cows into it and it would be like, right, change the filter, next, put tank in here, next, put this tap onto there, put this tap in this, and then right next, and then it'll say, right, disconnect this.
Did you make this thing or did you source it?
No, I haven't made it. There's nothing like this. So what we're trying to do is we're using technology to mean. So what I was, how do we put this? I was experienced in milk processing and the regulations around milk processing. So what we're trying to do is make it so that ordinary people can be milk processors and only operate within that parameter. So that's what the system does.
This is the genius of the difference between the two versions of Happy Cow.
Absolutely. Well, part of it. So what happens is our controller does everything and the human or the farmer is there to do things the computer can't, like open a tap or attach a tap and those sorts of things. So they push go, this will heat the milk up, cool it down, and then we don't want people handling pasteurized milk because that's where the contamination risk is,
right?
And that's where the cost is. So when I analysed our milk processing facility, so much of the cost was what we did with the milk when it left the pasteurizer. So we would have to cool it down and then put it into a tank and then it would go into a bottle machine. And all that stuff had to be in a factory to make, and we all had to wear hair nets and things to make sure that we didn't contaminate anything. So we've done away with all that, and we've made it so that, that once you've put raw milk in our little tank, you seal it up, push start, it heats up, it pasteurizes, and then you take the whole tank with you. So it's not getting opened up.
Huh.
If you so that
to the bottling stage from there, or
you just take that, you put on your truck.
Yeah.
Does it turn into a refrigerator at that point?
Not at that point. Oh well, it'll be cooled down on the farm, and then once it's at 4 degrees, you take the entire tank out and put it on your truck, and the farm will drive into a cafe, and now we're and then it becomes a milk dispenser.
Wow!
So the cafe, because it's the controller, we just put a little pump on there, and a cafe can just start. The only way to get milk out of our tank is through our dispenser.
I feel like you are the dairy equivalent of the guy who first put a radio in an alarm clock. You know, it's like it was just sitting there, guys.
Well,
all
it
took
actually,
was
it
some
is.
Genius to put the two things together, well, and you've solved a whole lot of economic problems, really.
Yeah. So the reason I've done it like this is like anyone can now become a milk retailer because the dispenser's on the tank. But that dispenser also has a digital payment system. So we've got a Raspberry Pi, a little
like
circuit
a
board thing.
Cheap,
little
programmable. Yeah. Yeah, computer.
Yeah, and it connects to the internet. So let's say you go to your local cafe. They're using the dispenser to fill up their jugs for milk. If you walk in, you can go to that same dispenser and swipe your phone, and it'll know that it's you, and it'll query your account, and when you push the button, it'll dispense milk, measure it, and then debit your account, and then go back to being the cafe's dispenser. You know,
wow.
And start charging.
So not this machine not only means that anybody can, well, not anybody, but anyone with a cow and a bit of know-how and some land can get into being a dairy farmer and use this machine to get their milk to the people. Mm. So it's not only have you done that, but you've also sort of democratized that whole system of how people are actually able to buy the milk in the first place.
Absolutely. So we want to... You know, anyone
could it be in schools?
Yes. I was just about to say we're going to launch in schools.
Oh.
So now anyone can fundraise by selling milk.
Oh.
You know, so that's
So you can be in a school and you might be coming in to pick up your kids and you just buy your milk when you're there and does the school or whoever it is with this vending machine get to clip the ticket?
Yeah. They'll get like at the moment we're planning on a school getting 50 cents a litre.
That's heaps.
So that's like, well,
it's
if
a
you
great
get,
little fundraiser.
Yeah, well, we think the average school of 500 pupils, if maybe 200 pupils bought their milk from the school, that's like 15K for the school every year.
Per annum, wow.
Without really having to do anything, because we manage everything. But what it also means is, oh, actually, you saw the tank out the front. Did you see it? That's the mock-up.
Oh, yeah. That was the thing that you brought up the driveway.
Yeah. I've been
it's
at a
tiny.
Show.
Far out.
Yeah, and that's it there. So it's on wheels. So, like... I mean, what I envisage, and I know what I envisaged won't happen, but I reckon there should be kids or teenagers or something who become the milk delivery people for their street. So they just take this thing, literally push it up the street and go up to everyone's door, and people just come and fill their milk up. And then they just go down to the next one. And
what? You're saying that your vending machine's also portable? It could be...
Yeah, this tank, it's all based around this tank, which is 130 litres, which is half the size of a dishwasher.
So how much does it weigh when it's not laden? Like, it doesn't have any milk in it?
Oh, I don't know yet. Oh, look, if it's got 130 litres of milk in it, it's at least 130 kg.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
So there's a few things we've got to work through.
Yeah. But, I mean, you put that on wheels, that's not a lot of effort to move around something.
Can you imagine the 8-year-old who loses track of it?
Well, maybe we graduate up from 8-year-olds to 15-year-olds or something.
Okay, the 30-year-old who loses track of it in the top of the hill, and you've got 130 kg missile going down the road.
For example, though, like, just off the top of my head, I mean, and you're the one working on the business here, but that's going to Southeast Asia and seeing the guys with rickshaws.
Yeah.
Is that what they're called?
Yeah,
bicycle at the front. Like, that would totally be...
e-bikes, yeah.
It'd fit on one of those.
Oh, yeah. We designed it for an e-bike. If you go to our website, amazing. We've got a picture of a cargo bike on there.
Hey, how much do Fonterra hate your guts?
Oh, I don't think they do. Oh, they didn't like the comment I wrote about them, but, the article I wrote about them, but...
You wrote an article about Fonterra?
Yeah, I write a column for Stuff.
What were the cliff notes of the Fonterra?
What was it? It was about how they're all so perfect that they don't want to make mistakes, because they are. If you know Fonterra people, they're really smart. You don't work for Fonterra if you're not smart. And there's just this culture of not making mistakes, and they can never really, in the past, they have never been able to say we made a mistake or we did that wrong. And I don't think, you kind of just got to try stuff and know that things are going to work. And this is I think, is the fundamental problem with Fonterra, is they always have to be right.
They're so risk averse, they can't break stuff.
They're at a pretty different stage of the life cycle of a business, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I mean, I had a phone call from a Fonterra person.
Crikey, I hope we don't get one to him.
No, they're okay.
The only thing you got to be worried about if it's from the legal department. If it's like a PR person, scrub that off. But if it's a lawyer, you take that call.
But this is the thing. It's like Fonterra have it within their power to do this. I mean, when I closed down, a person from Fonterra contacted me and said, my job's basically to find out why people don't like Fonterra. And I said, oh, well, I can tell you.
Has it got an hour?
Yes. And I flew up here to Auckland to meet them. And I basically came to them, I pitched them, and I said, you need to get the public back on board with dairy farmers. So I said, you've got some really good farmers. I know a lot of Fonterra farmers. They're good. I said, let's take my little system, which I've only got an idea of at the moment. This is how it's going to work. Let's take a young person from town who are not farmers, or anyone who wants to go farming, partner them with a Fonterra farmer, let them set up a little 50 cow herd, and the Fonterra farmer can teach them how to farm, and we'll tell their story, and they can supply, you know, the local community, and it's like they become the farmer, the happy cow farmer. And I said, this will sort of bring people back in line with putting the face to people, to dairy farmers and stuff. And anyway, they just said, This is quite strange.
This is amazing to me, because it seems like you set out to make a milk company, but you've actually created this. It's almost a technology company, it sounds like. Like, you've come up with this sort of franchisable concept.
Yeah.
Decentralize milk production and distribution.
Well, it is. It's decentralizing it, and it's democratizing it. And it is. It's like anyone can be a milk retailer. It doesn't matter who you are, whether you've got, you know, one leg or whatever, you can be a milk retailer. Anyone can be a farmer. Like, you can have 5 cows and you can work the system. Now, you might only just pay the mortgage or the rent or something with those 5 cows, but it's a start, because 5 cows have 5 babies. So next year you've got 10 cows.
Oh, plus it allows those opportunities for people who are trying to farm in a more diverse way, just to have some cows as well as a lot of the other things that they do.
Yeah, and that's what I've sort of learned. I mean, we probably tried to do too much 5 years ago. We're probably a bit early. But now what we're doing is we're just going to say, okay, farmers, you don't quite have to do the happy cow way fully, but let's just get you doing this. And then we've got milk and reusable packaging.
Well, exactly. It's almost two separate things, isn't it? It's like, because you're enabling, you're just simply by enabling anybody to be able to enter at that lower point in terms of scale, you're enabling the farmers who are trying to farm organically and sustainably a market. And that's awesome. And if other people jump on board, and they'll be on their journey too of trying to do things better. And even if they're not now, that technology could probably enable them to be able to take these steps, because it's safer financially.
Yeah, exactly. So, you just got to take baby steps, which, I'm just impatient.
So what is the picture looking like for Happy Cows now? Like, what's happening with you, Glenn, and
so
the business's trajectory?
We've built the prototype. I've got people who know how to do numbers. Now, I've got a good team. I've got a really good team. We've got lots of supporters, like Melissa Clark Reynolds. Don't know if you know her. She's on board. We've got really good people sort of coming on board and just questioning me, because or people who are who will challenge me, because that's what I find. Everyone, especially in New Zealand, will say, oh, yeah, you're doing great. Yeah, that, good on you.
Yeah.
But I really need people to say, are you sure about that? Like, really? And so I've got a really good team. So now we've got this prototype. We've built the the basic model that we know works, and now we're going to our crowd in 18th of November, and we're going to ask them to buy shares in the company through equity crowdfund with PledgeMe, and hopefully we'll raise $300,000. That'll allow us to I'll fly to China and we'll get the first one built, and I'll test it in Christchurch. We'll get it approved by MPI, and then we will launch.
MPI, for those planning at home.
Ministry for Primary Industries, the food safety regulators. Like, this is really different. Like, the idea that a pasteurizer actually moves around is not normal. So we've
never had anything like this in New Zealand. Globally, is there other?
Not even globally. And that's what we've patented, the idea that a pasteurizer is actually the final final packaging. That's kind of novel. I don't know if we can patent it, but we'll try. And we've got a farmer in the North Waikato. He's a pretty good one. And we're going to try and find a couple of schools, a couple of retailers in Auckland, and I'll test it out, and we'll see how it goes. And then once we've proved that, yes, it does work, the dispenser works, the payment system works, it does process milk, and investors, they all think, will people actually buy your milk? I'm like, I have no problems with that. They will buy the milk.
I think that sounds like you've really tested that water.
Yeah,
out.
But no, they're so conservative. They're like, well, is someone really going to take a reusable bottle? They might do it once or twice, and then they'll say, they will get sick of it. And I'm like, I have to show you then, obviously.
So, but even in the previous iteration of this, that wasn't a problem. That wasn't where the issues were.
No, I mean, it was probably a bit expensive, but I mean, the great thing about this is we'll be selling our milk at $2.50. So we're going to have milk in the market that has cows and calves together. It's going to be probably the same standard as organic, give or take, in reusable packaging that can scale across the country, and it's the same price as Fonterra milk.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. And there's the option for that, the retailer, to be someone like a school or a charity group or something like that as well.
And I think if we spread out on Facebook and say, hey, you can make this amount of money selling milk, I think we'll have all sorts of people wanting to do it. You know, like, there's so many Uber drivers and Uber Eats drivers and stuff. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Mm. But wow. I mean, I'd really want to. Yeah, we'll have to see what we've sort of thought about. Maybe you could have to be a charity or something like that, but I don't know. But anyway, either way, you may as well give money to spread the money out to all the people rather than giving it to a handful of Pack and Save owners, you know?
Usually we wrap up episodes of this podcast, Glenn, by saying, what is the one thing you would tell people to do to create some positive change in the sustainability space? I'd be tempted to plug for you and just shell and say, buy some shares in your in your IPO.
Oh, well, I'm backing myself, but just be careful. I think we all get a little bit, we think we have to change the world.
Do you realise what the name of this podcast is?
Yes, I know. You should, but we all think we've got to do something massive.
But actually,
we just have to do little things. And if everyone just did the little things.
Well, it is kind of how you change the world,
isn't it? Yeah.
What an amazing story. That's so cool. Thank you for coming on and sharing it with us, Glenn.
Oh, I appreciate you wanting to listen.
You've got such a classic South Island mentality. I've missed it. Just like, what you're doing is potentially a concept that could shake up the entire dairy industry, which is, you know, where we get most of our income from in New Zealand. But
I honestly believe that. I mean, I think it honestly can, but it's all about execution, and there's so many things that can go wrong.
But I feel like, and not that you will, but even if, you know, this and your version of it right now doesn't work, I think you have seeded this idea into the world now of, hey, there's actually a different way to do this. So even if this one isn't exactly right, maybe you'll do Happy Cows 3.0, or maybe someone will get this basic concept and be able to bring it forward.
If someone else does this and I can't make it work, I think I'll just end it there.
you would have contributed an incredible good into the world either way.
Yep.
What an uplifting story. It's very cool because, you know, as we keep saying, the news wants to flood you with doom and gloom about things in the green space and sustainability and what's happening with the environment, and it's important to not, lock yourself off to that. But there's just so much cool stuff that people are doing out there, like Glenn, if you look around. So keep doing that, everyone. Keep looking around for these cool stories and buy Happy Cow's milk.
Yeah. I can't wait. I can't wait to have Happy Cow in my neighbourhood.
Yeah, neither.
I'll be one of your milkies. I'll get a bike. That'll be my contribution.
All right.
Excellent.
Thanks again, Glenn.
Cheers, thanks.
Thanks again to our sponsor, Kokako. We probably wouldn't have made it through without them. Fuel yourself and your team with their beans by heading to kokako.co.nz. There you'll find a map of all the spots you can find their coffee brewing across NZ. Kokako coffee and beans are available throughout New Zealand.